Thank you. course, and flow inward, and mentally chant the same chant. We as you mentally chant the same chant without moving the tongue, the devotion starts to increase in size. And then you are really contacting the radiant form of spirit. Same exuberance, the same gusto will now be to the soul maker without moving the tongue. Now is the time to ask the question. Well, it depends why he's on a salt-free diet. More important than salty diet is, what is he eating right now?
Maybe
it's a little
heavy.
Well, I would think our basic problem is not such. It has to be a shock. Some type and in a different pattern, but the scars are suddenly going to. Unless really stuck, your body cannot just jump over and do one thing and the other. But if you're supposed to go off a 12-feet bike, I'd be more surprised to think that he's a heavy eater of carbohydrates. I find out that you love our biscuits and hot buns. Hot biscuits, you know. Well, if he's eating a lot of carbohydrates, white flour, white bread, stuff like that, our body will start eating food. You know, in the carbohydrate line, hot biscuits, pastries, spaghetti, macaroni, well, that already starts creating imbalance in the system. A little ham is at a place for it.
About
that. I wondered about it. You know, the master yoga man, a lot of himself to get so big. And why is his body so big? And yoga teachers, you know, why did it? I mean, I know that he didn't overindulge
or anything, but why did it happen? You know?
There you go, Master.
You've
got your belly
gets fat.
There was a woman who was a Hatha Yoga student and teacher of Hatha Yoga and a student of Hatha Yoga. Sat down in front of him one day while he had left in 1960. And she said the same thing in her mind. She didn't ask him openly. She was never introduced to him. He was just a person in the crowd sitting there. And he was lecturing on the gift of God's grace. This was told to me by a very woman herself. She's like a narrative story. He looked around and he said to her, "Helen, this body was given to me by my guru. Big as a quarterback, fullback. The American football is my body. And if you think there is any fat in it, you are entitled to come over and lift the skin up like that." And he pulled it himself. He dropped it down. She said she got up and she intended to find out if he was she tried from neck all the way down. She couldn't lift it up 8 of an inch. It was all muscle. Then she realized what she had encountered and what she felt with about his body. She said, "There was no fat business, it was all muscle." He had wanted a large body, he was a very skinny, wild kid. And he told his teacher, "He doesn't think he was able to make his body work to help do yoga, or to be a teacher of yoga. Because it was customary, most yogis in India are skinny people. And he wanted to break the thought pattern of the yogis being skinny and do something big. And if the teacher said he was going to go to America, and he had grand illusions of American fullbacks, you know, playing for Dolly, and the teacher blessed him. Because the teacher told him, "You're going to be looking to skinny. You need to..." But he told him the divine life power within was the only healer and giver of body. Whatever he wanted it to do. In other words, if he could shift his brain really from data level, so the alpha level, he could trigger the life energy to build a body to what size he wanted. Then the master blessed me, suddenly broke it up. Similarly, because he, Yukteswar, had the same problem. You see, he always attracts people with the same karma. Anytime you get the blessing from the guru, the funny phenomenon, you always get a student back to the same thing to give it up. The phantasm. Then he was skinny. He wanted to gain weight one day. You know, most yogis like, "Hey, it's very skinny people, fat as it." So he went to Lahe Mayak and said, "Master, I'd like to gain weight." "How much do you want?" He says, "I'd like to get back to my original weight." He says, "Well, it's done right now. You see, I'll have it right back, yeah." And then he walked home from the ashram. His mother said to him, "You're swelling up like a balloon." He was all back to his full size. The body comes by grace. And Yogananda's body was one such thing. And he wanted to weigh over 200 pounds because he considered 200, you know, reading about footballers in America, wearing a fullback has got to be over 200 pounds. So he was only 5 feet 5, you know. 5 feet 5. I stood in his footprint on the where it made his footprint in cast. And his footprints are about this size from here. My is larger than mine. My hands are barely about a half inch bigger than me, all the way up.
The picture, you know, the standing when the mother tackled is full length, you know, how he looks, and it's, you know. And I was very surprised, you know, this time. It was because I felt, you know, because I was doing yoga, that you discipline, you know, and of course, you know, that's the way, you know, and so it just, it wasn't that I questioned at all.
Well, this Mrs. Hamilton, Helen Hamilton, she then did the final test because she was under the same impression that yoga is going to be fire, you know, and what she was committed. That he was so big and it was all muscle. And what amazed her more, he can do all the postures. But you see, she didn't know about yoga. She only knew hatha yoga. When a person is realized and has never studied anything, any yoga posture, as soon as he's realized, he can go into the posture, because the posture is a representation of a state of consciousness. Hatha yoga is not what you can do. It's not a gymnastics.
No, I haven't.
It's a collection of postures representing different levels of awareness. And you can stand on your thumb for 15, 20 hours in that state of awareness. And if you come out of it, you've never been doing yoga before. How do you do it? The peacock posture.
Mm-hmm.
The scorpion posture. We don't have to gymnastics. We train ourselves to go into these postures simply because we are triggered by the imagination that it's a very wonderful posture for physical health. But the realized yogi, who knows God, principle of life, knows that these are levels of consciousness. Why is a peacock a peacock? Why is a scorpion a scorpion? These are all expressions of consciousness, taking on form. So being in union with the word yoga means union with life. You enter that altered state, and automatically you retain that posture, as long as you want to retain it. And it doesn't matter how big or how skinny or how tall you are. See, the joy permeated mother, and Moima, she's mentioned in the autobiography of Ananda Moima. They call her Ma. I've met one of her disciples who lived at this ashram. She said Ma never practiced hatha yoga, but anytime she would think of a posture or think of a state of consciousness, she would want to elucidate or talk about God. This is also she was slipping to the posture. Her whole body was slipping.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you have ever seen spasmodic action of the muscles of a human being? How does it put them into contortion? Now, if you photograph that person, show them after they come out with a spasm of their muscular contortion, they would never believe they were not eating. That's just a minute little indication of what the autonomic nervous system would do when you alter your state of consciousness of actually shifting the muscular structure. Now we can understand why acupuncture works. You can insert a needle in one part of the body and make that person do the peacock posture. Because even he ever learned the peacock posture, he's going to go right in the peacock posture. Because the muscle spasm is pulling, it's all biorhythm, energy that are working. And the body is just a follow-up. There's a whole host of things that the yogis don't come to talk about. They just do little things they encourage people to get on the path. You understand? There are lots to it. It depends on what the master's karma has to do with it and how you have to live with it. Like if you want a large body or you want a skinny body, or that is a karma suggestion for the worker. But you see, his body is really that realizing knowledge. The karma of the disciples determines the shape of the body of the guru. See, a guru cannot have a body in the first place of any type, color, or shape without the karma involved for those who eat or to dispel the darkness of the consciousness. It is their karma that molds it. Now, where was this guru coming from? India, to live in there.
Yeah.
And America are supposed to be big. They have to expect somebody big. You cannot expect somebody skinny to tell them. So the karmic consciousness, the karmic ideations of this particular environment, Europe and America, would trigger in the cosmos the need of some form to which they can relate. Bigness means strength, bigness means power, bigness means authority. You see some wise thing come along, own interest. So he, when he wanted to raise funds for his ashram, he used to do 50%. Though they don't tell you that. Only a few disciples know about it. So he used to do 50% to raise his funds for the ashram, and then they were broke. He would actually lie down and give a demonstration and take about 6 or 7 men to try to hold him down. The best, the biggest men in the country. Mostly footballers or policemen. They try to hold him. And he just do 2 breaths and put them all off his body. That's a hurricane. Keep his strength. And he would get a, what they call, locomotive and a track. He would tie a chain with a pad or your feet, or your feet. So he raised money for this pay off your ashram. A lot of things he did, nobody knew. I remember one time he told Sister Di, the very president today, when he met her in Utah. She came to him and she was suffering with the same problem that the woman suffered when she met Jesus, an issue of blood. And he was blessing there, and he came up to him and he asked for healing. Because normally I don't heal people, but I pray for the Lord if they speak truth, and the Lord wants to heal you. So he said, in 3 days, by the Lord's grace, you should be well. Then he bent over and said, if you don't, you run like a tongue. Because if you don't, they'll run like a tongue. And in 3 days, he was well. That's how he became a disciple. But she needed that. Really, a master doesn't do anything for the general public. It always has to do with the disciples. It's linked in some way, some subtle current that draws the relationship with the grace. And you see, the body is determined by the karma of the disciple. The birth is determined by the disciple's karma. And the death is determined by the disciple's karma. They're all determined by the karma of the disciple, because the guru has nothing to do. Once he accepts that God works through form, it matters to him not what form, he just merely receives the presence and let it work for him. And we end the struggle of ego and higher self. And then he is used as a source point for bringing individuals into their own future. Basically, the guru, what the word means, dispeller or lift up. One who dispels darkness, one who lifts up one from ignorance, make him conscious of his own nature.
It's no wonder that
his devotion comes from the fact that he has triggered these thoughts into his consciousness, and then when that form is crystallized to bridge and confirm certain internal experiences for him, then he knows he found guru, the individual who tends to hold or stabilize him, act as a mirror for his own inner growth. And if he stays with the contact, the more he stays with the contact, the more he grows. Simply because the guru has no other alternative than to hold the focus there. The guru doesn't do the work. The guru is an intercessor, the guru is a bridge, the guru is a mirror. And once the contact is made, then this process goes on itself. We find ourselves unwinding and find ourselves going on. And the consciousness, linking the sleeping consciousness of the student with the awakened consciousness of the spiritual person, to us.
How long before they became disciples of the Lord? I mean, before the disciples, before they were meeting.
when you initiated me? When did you feel, you know, you were going to initiate me?
The first thing, God is the Guru. I'm your brother. No, God is the Guru and I'm your brother. Yes. Well, who initiated you? Remember, you couldn't come unless God brought you. And then who you think initiated when you came? God initiated you, God brought you, no man chooses you. I choose it. That's what it says. You don't choose the consciousness. The consciousness chooses you out of the level which you are to bring you back. You are struggling in your own level of consciousness, looking for some direction of inner peace. You can't appreciate where you are. Then all of a sudden, in your search for this inner peace from all different types of books, suddenly you are drawn to one individual who talks of initiation. Before that, nobody talks to you about initiation. Then you hear of initiation and you're drawn. Then it tells you tomorrow is an initiation, and if you are there, come hell or high water, God brought you there. And if you ain't going to be there, come hell or high water, you ain't going to be there. But if you're there, rest assured, you see God initiated you, God brought you, God is taking care of you. Now, if God show me you before I saw you, that's God looking at God. See? This is your brother, nothing else. I'm not the Guru. I am myself can do nothing. The spirit, the light, the energy, the life, sympathy is light. This does everything. So remember Jesus said, he that do the will of the Lord is my brother and my sister. He that followeth in my word is my disciple. See, the statements are very specific. But I no longer call you my disciples, but my friends. That's the highest title you can bestow upon a person. I'm your friend now. More than a brother, I'm your friend. I'm not the Guru. God is the Guru, God is the disciple, God is the initiation, and God is everything. This form is just a wave on the ocean. But we get hung up on Guru image, we get hung up on Guru association. We get hung up on my Guru better than your Guru. When in actuality, the Guru is consciousness, he's not form. But consciousness works with a form. But if your consciousness that is reaching out from the level of desire, which is limited, and is reaching for a level of desire which is unitive, all-inclusive, but you don't know how to get out. So the question comes up, when the student is ready, a master will be there. So I wrote Yogananda one day and asked him, what constitutes readiness in a disciple? You know what he wrote? That's one word. This way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way, this way. The whole page, one word. Now one word is frustration. When you're totally frustrated and you have nothing to hide behind, no verb, no adjective, no pronoun to hide behind in your mind, then you are ready for the Guru to dispel the darkness. What is the darkness? The frustration of not being able to accept yourself as you are. And as soon as this happens to you, You are free, free man or lord of yourself. And what is it just telling? Giving you the technique of how to meditate. That's what initiates, introducing you to the sound current in the brain. No longer there's any frustration when you hear it. No longer there's any frustration of the mind going away and wandering. So, because we don't have instrumentation for all these particular principles, we tend to feel despondent and very left out, and we go looking for all kind of fanciful notions that's going to solve the problem of calm mind. When we know how to go in those states by the very techniques that are given, the result is always there, peace. The peace I give, the world don't give. The peace you experience by going from the beta level of your brain to the alpha level of your brain, nobody can give you that. You have to bridge it yourself. You have to know the technique of going in. The easiest technique to go in there is written right in the scriptures. When your eyes are single, when these eyes are focused right here, the whole body is full of light. You're in the alpha level immediately. No matter how you try to get out of it, you could be there. But how long you stay in there, that's determined by you. How long you can sit down and keep it there. When the eyes are single, the whole body is full of light. And the light is shining in the darkness. That means alpha level is already existing in beta level.
That's a good question. Where are you pointing to?
I'm not sure you're going to get a headache, because that's the first symptom of shifting from an altered state to another state. Where your present state is beta level, where you've got many, many frequencies going fantastically out, attracting you, a lot of vibrations here to attract you. So you're very, very happy here, you're very content, you're very normal. As far as yoga is concerned, you're very subnormal. Because that's a very subnormal state to have all the energy going out. Ego, energy going out. E is a unit of energy, and going means to leave you and go out through your five senses, through egos of perception. It's going away from you, that means it's dissipating from you. And you want to impress somebody, you got to blow it up. That means you got to extend your range of control around the environment by generating more of it. So don't you see people who are egotistical, how do they act? Like if they're running the whole show, generating more energy to show that they can control their environment. Now pull the energy back in, you got what? No, you got devotion, energy that is being divinized, energy that is being sublimated for the first time. That's what devotion is. It's energy going inward. The return of the energy back to its source, right here, the alpha level.
It's people evolving. What are we supposed to be
arguing?
What's
the thing about it? Love. Chill life. Very
childlike.
And then
you die after that, it's all over?
It's when you die, they're going to know if you stink up the place or you take off and go someplace. Or you don't rot. That's the evidence that you've arrived. If you don't rot, if you don't stink up the place, if you take off and go right away in a flash of light with your body, you have arrived. There's only four ways to be born and four ways to die. See? One, you're born not remembering your past life. Two, you're born remembering one past life. Three, you're born remembering most of your past life. Or immaculate conception, remembering most of your past life. And the fourth, direct materialization, they don't come out through the womb. Every one of those births are mentioned in your Bible. Now there are four ways to die. Die and rot. Die and not to rot. It's called non-corruption. Or non-decomposition. Die and take off with your body, it's called resurrection. Or not to die, just dematerialize your body at will. In the case of Moses, every one of these deaths are mentioned. There is no death, it's all birth. But there are varying phases of birth in the whole universe of life. The more we understand what we're talking about, we are confronted with the most fantastic science. It sounds like that Bible of yours is eventually going to be a science fiction book.
It's kind of like my guy is dressed like a bird or something. Mm-hmm. Like, doesn't it wish you have to write, come back from like different stages of evolution? Like, you know, I used to be near one time and I'd come up with protein and then I'd keep going on until I'm sitting there. And then you see like the stages of evolution. What I'm working for now, what will it be in the future, for the future? What am I
starting? What are you worried about? You're an initiate in the first place. It's not you it's not you who will determine where you will be. You're an initiate, number one. Who do you think is going to meet you when you die?
The guru.
All right. What is the guru there for the first place?
To guide
you. Guide you where?
Where I go from there.
When we die, we all face the law of karma. It stands on your left side of your body, the light, the energy called light, in the form of the law of karma or the angel of death, who accounts for every karma that you've done. Now, if you were never initiated, if you were never made aware of the audible light current, which is the guru, the audible light current, which is the guru, if you were never made aware of that, you will never know of it when you die. And you will never gravitate to it, so you can't be on the right side of your mechanism. So this individual who introduced you to this particular principle in your body, his radiant form will be there to sponsor for you that you don't go in the downward current of the light energy. The ransom is the sponsor. Not in the form of consciousness, that is there, will see that you are drawn now to one of the 84 million life forms that is human, providing you practice your meditation. Now, the law of karma or the laws of karma demand that you come down into the realm of the 84,000 life forms of Rakatu Karma. The person who is sponsoring you to make you aware of this audible life current in your body, because God is sound, God is the audible current, that consciousness has to rise above light. That consciousness has to detach itself from light. That consciousness has got to be free from the desires of light. The illusions of light is the universe. That consciousness has to be centered and focused intimately in the sound current. And know that the Lord of the soul is centered inside of him. Now that consciousness will sponsor you through the various levels of creation. And there are only 8 levels in which this whole universe is set up. And you will pass through these levels by the sound current at death. So you go through matter acting on matter by the sound current. You go through energy acting on matter. Then you go through consciousness acting on matter. Then you go through energy acting on energy. There, you will pass the law of creation. He will look at you. You don't like it to go, but you can't help because somebody's paying the bill for you. That person taught you the technique of getting out of his creation by showing you how to listen to the sound current. So what happened? He has to let you go. He lost one to the law of the soul. So you go up to the next level now, consciousness acting on energy. Then you recognize why this particular association between God and man via contact of initiation, because the sound current is vibrating there permanently now. Then you go to consciousness acting on consciousness. And then you go to beingness acting on consciousness. And finally, from there on, only you and God in the sound current can go. Nobody can go there. The last phase is you and God. You realize that at that phase, God became you. So the Guru is only a consciousness of the same God who makes the whole universe to take us back up.
I just don't like the memory of whatever I feel,
let me tell you a little story. You were not here when I told that story. There was a man who got off a train. He was a businessman. This is a true story, and it happens on Unilever. And this was told by the grandfather of the present living teacher, Reverend King. This man got off a train, and a porter met him, Barney the businessman. And the porter said to him, I have two prices. One, I charge you $3, and I don't talk to you for God. The other price is I charge you $1 and I talk to you for God. So the businessman ain't got nothing to lose. He's very economical minded. He just came back from his big franchises and he had a good medical checkup. What has he got to lose? He can afford to spend $1 and hear a man prattle about God. No matter what kind of God he talks about, that's his prerogative. Anyway, the man gave him the $1 and the man kept talking about God. The man said to him after a while, you know, I've been blessed by God. To see the future. And tomorrow you're going to die at 12 o'clock. Businessman listened to him and said to himself, good deal, what did he know? I just had a medical checkup, the best in the country. They tell me I'm okay 100%. My business is doing fine. Anyway, to humor the guy, so? What else? He says, I'll tell you, whenever you die, the angel of the death always comes and asks you one question. It asks every soul the same question that comes. And that question is, do you want your good karma first or your bad karma first? Now, I would suggest that you take your good karma first when you come. So, this guy humored a guy and he went home. Next day, he went to work. He's in his office and bingo, at 12 o'clock he got down and died. Who should appear to him? The angel of the death. The angel of death says to him, you want your good karma first or your bad karma? Which you want first, your good karma or your bad karma first? Well, so far in the businessman's mind, this portal was accurate. He's dead for sure at 12 o'clock. The angel of death is standing in there and asking the same one question. So he figured, I better gamble, I play hunches because I'm a businessman, I'm going to gamble on the porter's suggestion. I want my good karma first. So the angel of death says, your good what? Yeah, I want my good karma first. He says, you know, usually people ask for their bad karma first so that they can save it. And when that's all over, they have something good to look forward to you. To do, you see, something good they can look forward to when they finish the bad karma on the inner realm. But you ask him for a good karma now. He said, yeah, I want my good karma now. He's gambling because he's a gambler. He might as well gamble all the way. The man is proving accurate. Okay, let's see. So the angel of death starts going through all the files. And he didn't find nothing. But down at the bottom of the edge of one of the records, it merely says, all is bad karma. See, all the rest is bad karma. Only one little item says, entitled to run to 10 minutes in the presence of a saint. That is good karma, he was entitled to 10 minutes in the presence of a saint. So the angel of death says, this is what is recorded as your good karma. You're entitled to 10 minutes in the presence of a saint. So he says, a saint? Who do I know is a saint? But if you say I'm entitled, I'll take it. Better I gotta lose, 10 minutes is better than none. So he took him, the angel of death took him, brought him to the inner realm where the satsang is going on in the inner realm, and said, now you go in this door. And when I signal for you to come and go face your bad karma, you come out. Because I can't go in there. It's not possible. The vibrations are too good. So the businessman walked in the satsang. And then he went into the satsang. The distance he can walk in was 4 feet. Couldn't go any further than 4 feet. The vibrations were too strong. That's as far as he got into the satsang. 4 feet inside the satsang. And looking to the middle of the satsang among all the different faces, who do you see sitting down in the middle giving the satsang? The porter sitting down directly in the satsang. Anyway, the angel of death signals 10 minutes up. Time to go. And the businessman gets up to go out, and all of a sudden the porter shouts, "No one leaves my sat trunk till it's over. Tell out whoever you are." So, what is he going to do? He looks at the edge of that. He starts gesturing to him. Up. He said, "Down." The angel of death is angry now because everything is gonna go wrong in the universe because he's late. He can't deliver the soul on time. He's got to go and get his bad karma. So he signals again and he tries to get up to come out. And again, the man who's giving the satsang says, "No one leaves the satsang until it's over. Put out whoever you are." So the angel goes now to the next one above him to get the permission to take the soul out of the satsang, to go face the karma, because now he is in fire. He's got a account. You see, karma is a law of accounting for every single act. You can't waste no time in the law of creation. So he goes to the archangel. He tells the archangel that this soul doesn't want to come out of the satsang to go face his bad karma. So the archangel says, "Impossible, there's no such thing. Everybody faces their karma." So he and the other angel, they go down to the satsang. And they arrive, what happens? The signal to come out. And he tries to get up to come out. And again, the man says, "No one leaves my satsang before it's over." So he can't come out. So eventually they're all late now with the soul to deliver it. So they all have to go to the Lord of Creation to tell the Lord that the soul is late, doesn't want to come for his karma. So the Lord of Creation is sitting down and they're telling him. He says, "What? Which soul is that? Which satsang you put him in? Every soul has to come. There's not a single satsang that I cannot enter in. There's no yogi, avatar, messiah, anything, anyone that I can enter. Which satsang is this soul that he can't go in and get him out?" So the Lord of Creation came down and he went to the satsang. He said, "This is the satsang you put in?" They said, "Yes, Lord, he's entitled to 10 minutes presence in the same." As soon as he goes to open the walk-in, all of a sudden, the Lord of Creation fell down on his knees. He said, "Sorry, my Lord, but that man is my guru. He is the Lord of the soul running the satsang. He could not take the soul out. He begged pardon for intruding and back out and let him do his job, running the creation." And the man who was entitled 10 minutes satsang was granted the grace to stay in the spiritual life. The guru is merely the individual who introduces you to the sound current in your brain. It doesn't matter if a porter does it to you or Mr. Nixon teaches it to you. The fact that he introduces it to you, he is your sponsor in the bank of life. He is assuming your karmic debt so that you don't have to face it now through the law of karma and the law of creation. Let me pass on. You don't have to go down in the downward currents of the life field. We go up to the current of the audible life current. Therefore, we are allowed to go back into the human form. Now, we are promised to return back home to the divine creator, Lord of the soul by the guru consciousness, five life forms, five lifetimes in human body. But it doesn't say he promises to take us back in five successive human life forms. You are under the protection of the guru consciousness, who will see that you work out the karma that you've incurred and allocate to you opportunities, five human forms, and in between those five human forms, you may have to work out a few non-human forms, but he will take care of that because he is responsible for keeping you in tune with some current. Now, how are you going to take care of it? So somebody buys a rabbit. The rabbit has a litter of five rabbits. Four live and one dies. that one rabbit that dies, you burn out that karma. Because you have just to be in that form for a split second to work out that karma. Now, you get another human form, and you may born, you know who, and you may born with a cripple. But you work out that karma. Then in between again, you may born in a horse. But a foal dies before they deliver the horse. The karma is being worked out, speed up in terms of death. Then you get another human form where you're born as a human being. And you may only live up to 21 years. Then you pass out. Then this is a second life form now of a human, I'm showing you in a human form. In between you go on, you may become now an egg. Somebody break the egg, not so as they pick it up from the chicken. So it doesn't last too long in this creative field. Then you get a third human life form in which you may live for 50 years and you may do something constructive in society and then you pass out. Then in between again, you may have another life form as a bug. This don't have a very long lifespan. Now, that then the fourth lifetime, the fourth human life form, you may be born as a baby, blind, or some illness, and may live for a little while, a few months, a year or two, and it passes on. Then again, you'll have another non-human life form, like a tree. And that's a long incarnation of the tree. Because I don't know, but if you're lucky, somebody may chop you down before your time. You don't stay too long, or the snow come along and kill it. As soon as they plant it, the bug eat it up. So that gets rid of the fact that you're staying in that karmic pattern longer than normal. Then the last human life form is this. You're born, take one breath and pass out. Then everybody says, how come God can be so cruel? Give the woman a child and didn't live too long, it just breathes and dies. But the human life form has been accounted for by the Guru consciousness to compensate for your karma. In between, you had other forms of experiences, all diminishing the conditions in the human body, all diminishing the conditions in creation.
What's the karma for somebody that thinks about meat?
Well, the karma is not giving up meat. You have to experience what it is to be a little piggy, a little lamb, maybe born for a few seconds and die, maybe born blind, maybe born in dead in pregnancy. You have to live through these forms. Now, a person who is not initiated will live longer in these forms by their karmic depth. The person who is initiated, the time span is absorbed by the consciousness of that individual. That's why when it's tuning into the life current, they are using that particular time. They have built up sufficient credit in their bank of life to warrant you to live out a shorter span of time in these forms that you have reacted to. Now, when you're initiated, everything that you did before initiation is absorbed by the Guru consciousness. Everything you do after initiation, you're accountable for. The consciousness is not going to punish you. You're punishing yourself by your own actions. So you have to go through different little things to compensate it.
What happens to somebody who doesn't want to be responsible?
They're only kidding themselves.
You mean
it's
not
the guilty
for the act,
but all
the
time the world comes in? Yes. They're only delaying the action, that's all. The consciousness cannot do more than that. They're delaying themselves.
Okay.
You're not doing anything. If you were never initiated before, you would not be sitting down in a room hearing of initiation in a human body. You have to be initiated before. And it doesn't have to do with the body who is initiating you, because that body has to die too. That body of Jesus died, you know. But weren't you sitting down one time in front of one of his apostles or disciples at one time? You think Peter had a wrong back to do the initiation? But you might have been there at the time when Peter did bless a couple of people and initiate little kids and everybody. And we might have been one of those souls there. But we have been initiated. Once initiated, we'll always get initiation. That is the principle. Once we are introduced to the audible life current in ourselves, which is what initiation really is, once you're introduced to the fact that the Lord is the audible life current in your brain and in your body, every incarnation you will be encountering this experience. You will hear it in your body when you're born, growing up, and don't even know what it is. Like a doctor would talk to me and he said to me, you know, for 40 some odd years I heard this whirring sound in my ears. I didn't know what it was, and I went to all my colleagues and I wanted them to operate it, cut it out. And he says, now I'm ready to be initiated, what am I going to hear? I said, that same thing is what you're going to hear, that whirring sound in initiation. That is the God you're looking for, but I'm telling it to you. Before nobody's saying it to you that it means that, or that is what is intended for it. But now that is what it is. You have had it done to you before in a past life by some other individual, and if you think it's me in the past life, it's not me physically, it's me the energy. That divine consciousness is passing through is me, not little Emmy, but cosmic Emmy. It's the same principle that's going on all the time. It has to make contact all the time. So it introduces you to the sound. It's not a Dano, it's just cosmic principle that's working all the time. So hook it up. And every time you're introduced to it, whatever incarnation you come into, you'll hear it. And once you hear it, you're going to go looking for it. And you may want to cut it out. But you think you can cut it out? You can only suppress it. That's as far as you can go with it. Then eventually one day, you'll be drawn again by that same nauseating, harassing principle to go and be exposed to it. Then you're introduced again back to it. Once you're introduced back to it, you'll realize this is where the spiritual life is. You start beaming in again. You're on your way back home. So we never left out by the current.
Again, that, my grandmother just died, she was never initiated. So, was that like one of the first incarnations you did in the current?
No. you say your grandmother passed on and she was never initiated. Your grandmother, how do you know she never initiated? How do you know that our minister, somebody never spoke to her but it wasn't coming out of her before she died? Now, how do you know that she never heard this buzzing song and wondered why? I'll tell you a story. It was a brother disciple of mine. He came over to America and he studied with Yogananda. And you can hear all the song current inside me, well in his later, spiritual realization. And then he was given the opportunity to go lecture. And he returned back home to visit his mother in Europe. And now he's a full-fledged minister and teacher. And he comes home to his mother, and mother sitting in a rocket chair and rocking, looking on. No conversation passing between them much because he sees sophisticated in his mother's antiquated old ideas, you know. And mother says, you know, son, in my old days now, I usually pray to my Lord, you know, in these afternoons like this in my rocking chair. And I hear the bells, you know, they do ring sometimes, one good long time. And then once in a while the drum play, you know, son. And then, you know, not too long ago I heard the harp, you know. Very, very beautiful music coming from the harp. And then I hear the bagpipe. And your son is listening. And he says, holy Moses, he's already there. I'm not even up to the bagpipe yet. But he thought he had something over his mother. He thought because his guru initiated him, he was something special. not realizing that the woman might have encountered an ordinary minister who might say to her, all these songs are there. That doesn't say that the minister is more advanced or less advanced. It's any individual who makes you conscious of this fact. That's what they call guru, one who lifts you up. The current goes up. Anyone who has dispelled the darkness, dispelled the doubt of why this thing is buzzing in your ears, that person is called guru. The person who will dispel that condition of your mind. If a child come along and tell you the song in your ears is God, what would you do? He's initiated you without even you asking for it, because he's confirming for you something that you're doubting. He's confirming in your mind something that you're looking for and don't have no reason for understanding. And out in the mouth of babes come the truth sometimes. Any individual who can make you conscious of this particular song is dying. But the doing of the technique has to do with it, the actual meditation. I'm glad Mother is in the door. How would you know about it? How would you know of it if you never were initiated? Now you're initiated, you think your mother were not? Your mother was initiated now, all right? On that list. All right. No, I think when I'll work, I'll take the next. But they're all here for the retreat. They're not going any place. Last night I sat in the men's long, I'll just sleep in the room. So you'll do the recycle. That's why the person said to me, you're inviting me, what you do is you come to God. Somebody asked me that because I can do them and I'll recycle them and put them in the garbage.
You must put them in the garbage.
I'm going to go to the next one.